Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. And before we get started, this is season 9. We're so excited to be in season 9. And thank you to everybody who has rated and left comments on the podcast and even subscribed. It's been such a blessing. And today I'm here with Phil and Diane and Elizabeth. Hi, everybody.
Hey. Hello.
Hi.
You guys are so much more chipper today. That's probably because I asked you to be more chipper when I said, when I say hi, could you please respond?
I'm telling you, it's the awkward intros. They just can feel awkward.
We're working through it. But we were just discussing, isn't it so encouraging to get some of these comments? Isn't it just encouraging to your soul? I know for me, it's just been a huge gift. How about you guys?
It's really encouraging because, you know, we're used to teaching and to real people that we see week after week in church.
Yeah, yeah.
And here we sit around the kitchen table and we don't necessarily see a face.
Yeah.
When we're teaching. So the comments just put a face to the difference it might make.
These are real people listening. But I know what you're saying. We can't see you. But when we get this feedback from you, it so blesses us.
And it feels like we see you.
Especially when you see the Lord as Jesus in your life.
Yes.
It just spurs us on. It puts fuel in our gas tank.
Summer, we've had the chance to overlap with some of you listeners. And it has been so encouraging to hear and to sit with you. I know we met a good crew at Forest Home and at the camp we were at, and Greta Eskridge, who's been on the episode before. It was so funny. It was our actual first time of meeting in person. Like, we feel so close, but Scarlett was at the camp and she just grafted right into her family. And then I got to spend a ton of time with their whole crew. And oh my goodness, it was so fun to like actually be with people in person that you know and love. And Greta, the Eskridge family is grafted into ours. We're so thankful for them.
Definitely.
But yeah, we just want to say thank you. If you haven't had a chance to rate or subscribe and or leave a comment, that's just one way that really helps us get the word out. So would you just even take a second and do that? And thank you for all that have. We're actually going to get into a wonderful topic today that's convicting. It's encouraging in one sense, hard to understand. And I think something we can all relate with as if you're married or if you're a human or if you have kids, any stage of life. And that is the idea of anger. Anger. I think we all can understand and connect with this idea. And a little bit ago, I think it was to our email subscriber list. Elizabeth, tell me if I'm right on this. We sent out an email that basically said, hey, what are some of the things that you would like us to talk about? Am I right? Is that the space that we sent that out?
Yeah. And social media? Side note, shameless plug. If you want to get emails like that, and if you want to be able to put in your personal request for things you want to hear about, subscribe to our email list. We don't send emails out very often. We won't spam you with things, but you will get the first heads up on various things we're doing and new podcast seasons coming out.
How do they do that, honey?
Good question. How did they do that? Our website.
Go to our website. Yes.
Go to intentionalparents.org.
Intentionalparents.org.
Sign up right there.
Yeah, there's an easy spot to sign up. Just look for it. It's right at the bottom of
the
page.
I may write the emails, but the rest of it's in your court.
It's not even in my court. I mean, it's so funny. I wasn't necessarily trying to quiz you, but I understand that's probably what it felt like. Don't be angry at me, okay? We're going to talk about it. But that's a great way. You're right. And then we also have something in October that we'll tell you more about, but we have the Legacy Builders fundraiser that we have in Portland. So if you're in the Portland area, you're curious about that, that's another way to hear more about how we are partnering with individuals to help bring this message of intentional marriage and parenting and spiritual formation in the family, like how you can get on board with that, even in some practical ways. So if you want to know more about that, also jump on that email list because that's where we'll send stuff out. Soon. Yeah, we'll send stuff out on that. But that's not what we're here to talk about. That was a side note. But Let's talk about anger. So we had someone, I'm not going to say share her name, but she sent in this wonderful question. And I think all of us just really relate with this. We all four, I won't expose anyone else. I'll say for myself, anger is a problem in the sense of I definitely feel when I'm overwhelmed, anger is a real part of my life. And I would say, knowing my wife, Elizabeth, that's the case. And what being close to you, Phil and Diane, you're connected to this reality too. And so, so she sent in this question, which I'm going to read and then we're going to get into. But it's a little bit longer, but I do want to just read it because I think it not only has the heart of the question, but it also has a little bit of like, you can hear her struggle, which I think is a lot of our struggle too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. She says, first, in regard to anger and self-control and parenting, I truly have never struggled with anger in my entire life. I can't explain it to other than it's just how I'm wired. I'm easygoing. I'm a peacemaker. So she's basically saying like, this is new to her. And then she goes on, but now I'm finding as a mother of a four-year-old and a two-year-old and an infant that anger is something that I have to wrestle with on a regular basis. Ironically, I'm working hard to train my children on how to behave and have self-control. Don't worry, we feel this tension all the time. Mm-hmm. When they feel angry, every time I address it with my children, I feel I'm addressing myself too, which is good, but I feel like I'm lacking in this area. Any advice for parents struggling to develop self-control in the area of anger, impatience, frustration, etc.? Sometimes I feel enslaved to it, and like there's no way out when I'm at my wit's end. Oh my goodness. Can we just say thank you for putting words to how a lot of us feel?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I can so relate with that. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have described myself as I don't struggle with anger until I started having kids. Brooke's laughing.
I'm sorry.
I think I've come to realize though is that I've actually always struggled with a low level simmering anger.
Yeah.
Of things not turning out in the ideal way that I'd planned in my mind. Or I think what I would now describe it as I didn't struggle with outbursts of anger, except the occasional, like I'd stuff stuff for too long and things would blow up. But it was when we started having kids and had multiple kids and stresses started to mount that I started to struggle with impatience and outbursts of anger that felt very new to me until then. Realizing, oh, this all just simmered under the surface and I could control it before.
Right.
And now I have these little people just exposing it.
Exactly.
And I would add, I don't know if you can relate to this, well, any of you. It seems like as my kids have gotten older, it's gotten harder, not easier. Like the big kids bring stuff up in me that are like deeper wounding that I have that maybe I didn't have to deal with when they were little and they weren't igniting certain things, but it's almost like there's more under the anger now, if that makes sense.
Oh, that comes
out with that my bigger sense. Kids, not to give no hope of, but that it's actually become harder as they've gotten older.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you mentioned her in the last podcast, but I'm sorry, Megan, we're going to mention you again. We had a great talk with this gal, Megan, on Sunday at church, and she listens to the podcast, but we were having this great conversation and we were talking about this reality that, you know, she's a young mom and I won't expose her story, but basically like she's feeling some of what we're talking about. And I can say like, I would have said that I'm a pretty easygoing, joyful. I'm a pretty intense person. So it's not surprising to me that I would struggle maybe more with anger, but I would have not categorized myself as a person who struggled with anger as much. And I think there's a lot of people, not just myself or Megan or us, that are in this space of like, there wasn't a lot of pressure. And then all of a sudden this pressure starts coming on more and more. And then all of a sudden your capacity lessens. And then all of a sudden who you really are is revealed. And the hardest.
No, wait a minute. I talked to Megan on Sunday too. And I corrected her thinking.
This is great.
And said, no, Megan, that is not who you really are.
Yes. Thanks for clarifying.
The biblical model is she's beloved of God, beautiful, being made into the image of Christ. A messy process. As we can all attest. But the biblical model is that under pressure, it's like gold being heated and the impurities are rising to the surface. And then the Holy Spirit kind of scoops those impurities off to make us more beautiful. So it's not who you really are.
Not, thank you for correcting that.
It's a way that the Spirit is beginning to make you who you really are,
yes.
the real person that you are. So then, I think that's important. Otherwise, we just get caught in this shame of
yes,
what an awful yes. person I am. No, that's not really true. But in those temptations and in our failure, we recognize our dependence on God. And that's one of the best results of anger.
Yes.
As we realize, I'm a wreck.
And it's not who you are, but that's in you, right? It's like, so for example, like, and that's more of what I meant, but thank you for that clarification because that is so important and we could get so off, but it's that reality. Like when I'm angry, I have to accept the reality that I have something to deal with. Like I can't just leave this undealt. Mm-hmm. And I actually have things
to take responsibility
me.
For it.
Yes. 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 What were we going to say?
Another way, I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but another way I had somebody describe it to me is I was saying that in a really stressful situation that the worst is coming out of us. I was saying that being the worst mom, like the worst is coming out of me. And it was with a counselor and she stopped me firmly, just like you just did, mom. And she said, not the worst of you. She said, your wounds are coming up. And I think all in the same line, I think it can often be this layered thing of, yes, the things that are deep inside of you that need to come to the surface that God wants to purge out of you. Sometimes it's wounding that never got dealt with. And our kids have this way of surfacing it and making and putting it front and center where we realize, wow, I've got to go get help for that.
And sometimes it's some false values.
Yes.
The false, not the true self, but the false image that we're trying to protect that makes us mad. I think we should talk about that in
for
a minute
sure.
too.
Yeah. For sure.
But in the meantime, Phil has, as Phil, he always has some depth of scripture because we don't want to just pontificate about our experience of anger. We want to ground it in the word of God always.
Always. You have the ball. Go.
I have the ball.
Take
I have to carry it really fast, and I'm not very fast because I got to leave pretty quick here.
Yes, you do.
As much as I don't want to, but you know.
You had some stuff going on.
Calls.
Hey, we'd rather have a little bit of you than none of you. So
It's not even a big, really spiritual thing I have to go do, but I have to go do it.
You have to go get your dog
groomed. I have to get our dog groomed, and it took us 2 months to get an appointment.
Yeah, so actually, that's the truth of the matter is Phil's going to be here for like 15 more minutes, and then he's going to be out, but these 15 minutes are going to be strong. So
well,
take
I won't
us
go
there.
That long, but you know, I want to start with, I really, the gal who sent this question in, I see your humility and your honesty and your godliness. And thank you so much because I think there's not a person alive, a mother or a father or a follower of Jesus who doesn't feel exactly like you know. There are people that grew up with angry parents who yelled and maybe they do have a problem with explosive anger. But a lot of us that didn't, that had peaceable parents, we would, like you, Elizabeth, I said, you know, I don't think I have a problem with, you know, yelling and blowing up. But I did study on this a long time ago. There are three different Greek words translated anger in the New Testament. And one of them is explosive. But the other one is that seething kind of bitterness that includes wanting to seek revenge. And the other one is really funny because it's this Greek word paragismos. And it means just irritable, just paragismos. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just get irritated. Yes. I think parents get irritated because they're tired. And so that kind of anger, every parent knows. In Ephesians 4, and by the way, this whole idea, you guys have already said it, that like, hey, I'm realizing I need work on this too. And we like to say in our parenting conference, right, that not only is God using you to shape your kids, but he's using your kids to shape you.
Yes.
And what we're really talking about today is how we are being redeemed. Mm-hmm. We've been redeemed. We've been saved from the penalty of sin. We're being saved by the power of the Holy Spirit from the power of sin.
Yes.
When all this garbage comes up, if we turn to the Lord and he can begin to free us from this as we begin to learn what it means to walk in the Spirit. But we're not going to be free from the presence of sin until we're with the Lord one day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's the whole work that God is doing in every follower of Jesus. He's making you more like him. Mm-hmm. And then the more we cooperate, the faster it happens. It's this transformation, and it includes how we deal with anger. Anyway, Ephesians 4, we had our kids memorize it. Elizabeth, you had to memorize it. We paid you money for it. 25 to 32, one of the best passages on relationships in the Bible. And right in the middle of it, Ephesians 4, 26 and 27, it says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. That's only two verses, and we don't have time today to really talk about everything that's there. But it says, in your anger, don't sin. So I think the first thing is, knows anger itself is an emotion. It, yes. Anger itself isn't good or bad, and we all know what it is because yes. we all experience yep. it probably almost every day. One good definition of anger is this. Anger is a strong feeling of displeasure or hostility caused by a real or perceived offense, injury, or unmet desire, usually accompanied by a desire to seek revenge. I think it's kind of funny.
Yes.
But anyway, in and of itself, it's not bad. But how we handle anger, that's what we're going to talk about in this podcast. Yes. That makes all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, remember, we're made in the image of God, and God gets angry. And so the one distinction I wanted to make before I have to cut out of here is we're going to be talking today about sinful anger.
Yes.
You know, in your mm-hmm. anger, don't sin. There is a righteous anger, yes. a righteous indignation. Exodus 22, God says about himself, you shall not take advantage of any widow or orphan. I would throw in single mom there. If you do and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry and my anger will be kindled.
I know.
So, and then yes. Jesus, of course, Mark 3, when it was a Sabbath and he wanted to heal a man with a withered hand.
Yes.
And the Pharisees said that was work. Healing was work. They had all these rules. And
yeah.
and he looks around and Jesus says, is it lawful to do good or bad on the Sabbath? And they were silent. And it says in Mark 3:5, Jesus looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, their lack of compassion yeah. for this man whose hand was all withered. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand and heal it. So we see yes. that's righteous indignation. And we're made in God's image. And we feel this too. When we see mm-hmm. injustice, we see a child being sex trafficked and we say, that's wrong. Yeah. And so we do feel this righteous anger, but we have to be careful because God is sinless. Mm-hmm. So his anger is always purely righteous. We can become self-righteous. I know I can. Like, it's really easy for me to look at somebody else and say, that person.
Yeah.
And even though I might be right, I might be dead right.
Dead right, yes.
And so, but here today, we want to talk about in your anger, don't sin. And I think that's how we handle it that is so, so important. And just one more quote, and then I want to give one more scripture, if that's okay.
Please.
Before we get into this. So Aristotle said this, anybody can become angry. That's easy. But to be angry with the right person to the right degree at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that is not within everybody's power, and it is not easy. Now that's Aristotle. That's not the Bible.
That's so true.
But God says in Proverbs 16:32, he who is slow to anger mm-hmm. is better than the mighty. And he who rules his spirit, that's the yeah. self-control mm-hmm. part, yes. than he who captures a city. And so God says, hey, if you can learn with the power of the Holy Spirit to have self-control and bring your anger under the control of the Spirit and then not let the sun go down in your anger, then you're going to experience a lot of good things from it. And God's going to use it, the struggle with it,
yes.
like our struggle with all kinds of sin, to shape yes. us into our deep need for him.
Yes.
And then whenever we cry out to him, he is right there to help us. So.
I love what you're saying there. Yeah. Do you have something, Diane?
I love what he's saying too, you yeah. know, that there is a righteous anger. And I think even with towards our kids, we experience some righteous anger that we turn into an ugly sort of anger really quickly. Mm-hmm. But it's hard not to get mad at your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just think about it. You know, they're in your face. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to not be angry when your kids are just defy you mm-hmm. or start mm-hmm. screaming because they didn't get their way or embarrass you when you're standing in, I think this should be banned, by the way, a toy store that has a long aisle leading up to the cash register full of little junky foods and, you know, dollar toys. I'm angry. You see, I've got some resentment there.
I'm not angry at that person. I'm angry at the guy who designed IKEA, where you have to walk through the entire store to get, no.
There's a shortcut to that.
Or when you see your child hit his brother or sister. I mean, you do experience this jolt of, that is just so wrong. Mm-hmm. It's having then the self-control to slow it down and not mm-hmm. react. And especially not to use anger as a means of controlling those around you.
Yes.
I think that's when we get harmful. yeah. is when we use anger as a means of control and we replace good training with our own intensity and anger to get our kids to stop doing what they're doing. And yet, that's where I feel like I failed the most. In all honesty, you know, I grew up with an angry mom. Mm. She was wonderful 80%, 85% of the time, like the ideal mom doing all the stuff for you. Mm-hmm. But then there was something inside of her that never was able to be healed by God that she didn't understand and maybe never really faced her own anger, what was going on. You just never knew what was going to trigger it. And then it was bad.
Yeah.
And so I, of course, self-righteous person that I am, I wish I could say was, determined I was never going to yell at my kids. Absolutely not. No. My mom was just a fool I lost respect for her.
Yeah.
And then the first time I heard myself, where I immediately thought, oh my gosh, you sound just like your mom, was probably the most shameful moment of my life. And at the same time, most opened a door to redeem the parts of me that needed redeeming.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that the stupid stuff that I got mad at and lost my temper at with my kids, in particular, their messes. And kids are messy, you know, creative kids, especially are messy. It seemed like the one thing that I ever lost cool with on my kids was always about the house.
Yeah. Well, I want to read one of the notes you put here.
Okay.
You put anger reveals what matters to us, both good and not good, both good and not good. And so I think
not good. It reveals something good, not good.
But it also reveals something good. Right? Like wanting a clean house is, I guess, to just maybe play the other side of the table.
Yeah.
It's okay to want clean stuff.
Order. Yeah.
Order's good, but like there's that line where it becomes not good, where it becomes oppressive to other people to help that be something. I didn't mean to point at you, Elizabeth. Sorry.
Yes.
My body language just forced me to say that.
Those are redeemable moments when I was beginning to have compassion on my own mom.
Yeah.
And thinking back, she didn't even have the tools that I had. And she grew up with an angry father. And so I just think that we can use those moments to thrust ourselves on God and to say, I need you. I can't even not be an angry mother unless I'm reliant on your presence every moment of every day, because that's the only way to stop it.
Yeah.
Is as we become aware of the presence of God to such a degree that he's able to be putting a guard over our mouth and the expression on our face and our physical reactions.
Well, before we move on to the next thing, because what you're talking about is great. Phil has to go. Phil, please say bye to everybody. We love you.
Goodbye, everybody. Sorry. Our English cream golden retriever, who Diane calls my baby boy.
Oh, he's just as much your baby as
he is my baby too. I mean, when you don't have any kids or grandkids there, you got to love something, right?
And you know
so
what?
We love our dog.
I don't think I've ever gotten angry at our dog.
No, just at me.
I have.
Because she doesn't have the messy kids now. Angry she has a dog. Messy husband. All right.
I've gotten very angry at your dog. So that makes one of us. We'll miss you, Phil. You know, what you were saying though is really important. And I think you're right. Like I was talking to, I was reading about how even our facial expressions, when we are listening to somebody share something hard or traumatic or painful to them, how incredibly important it is for us to have kind facial expressions and how even just listening with a certain amount of actual like empathy in our eyes and in our face, like how that's healing in and of itself. Yeah. You know, it's really important. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to highlight that. You know, I think you also said, you know, Phil mentioned this, obviously righteous anger. There is examples. We have Jesus. We have, I think, what did we put? Abraham Lincoln and Mother Teresa. Like there's these moments
who were motivated to do great things for God because they got angry about something and decided to do something. I think that's really important because this is true in our lives as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you never experience anger, you're probably going to live a pretty complacent life.
Yes.
And maybe something's a little dead inside of you. But Mother Teresa, I mean, it was looking at those disregarded people on the streets of Calcutta mm-hmm. that nobody cared about. They yes. seemed beyond help. And she gave her life to that. I think it's really important. We see Jesus showing righteous anger at the mm-hmm. temple when it was just being so misused.
Yeah, yep.
And that is important. I think I've always felt that anger is just sin, but differentiating when anger motivates us to thoughtfully look into how we can be part of the solution is a good thing. On the other hand, during all the last couple of years of political upheaval, even a lot of Christians have pretended or deceived themselves into thinking that their righteous anger, so to speak, allows them to speak unkindly, judgmentally,
to be more angry,
cruelty and judgment towards others. And it's taken a toll on our churches. So this is not just in our home, but don't you think that our homes can be an incubator of where our children learn mm-hmm. that they can control their anger because mom and dad are actually learning control their anger alongside them?
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, I think this is the hardest point of my parenting as well. Because it's convenient to use intensity or anger mm-hmm. to motivate your kids. Because sometimes when they're all the other tools you've tried, they're just like, yeah, forget you. Nope, not going to do that one. Not going to do that. Like that becomes an easier tool to use. Mm-hmm. And depending upon what you even have in your own past, in your own history, even the traumas you experienced as a kid, as I've done a lot of research and or therapy around trauma, I've learned a ton of things about trauma. And one of the things that's been so helpful is if you've experienced certain levels of trauma in your life, and all of us experience various levels of trauma, right? Some big T trauma, some little T trauma, those are different words or ways to describe it. But when you experience trauma, your central nervous system, instead of maybe operating at if the scale is from 1 to 10, and if I've shared this on this space, I'm sorry, this is a repeat. But if this is if you have a scale from 1 to 10, and that's kind of like your stress level, most people throughout the day maybe operate between, if you don't have trauma, you operate between like a 1 or a 3. You get stuck in traffic. You have to wait in a line. Your kids aren't listening. Your stress level maybe goes from like 1 to 3 to 4, right? Mm-hmm. But you're not like getting up to that upper echelon of 10 where you're just losing it. You go completely into fight or flight. When you experience trauma, your baseline starts at 7 or 8. And you live at a 7 or 8, and then it only takes a few things, a kid tripping over a toy and breaking something for you to all of a sudden go from like, hey, I'm totally fine, to blowing up and being abnormally over-responsive to the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to identify, because I think there's both types, because some people are talking about the kind of anger I just described. Some are talking about the simmering anger. There's different types. But I think it's important to identify if that is the case for you. I think getting help is a really important part of that, or understanding what is the trauma? What are those things? And is that going on with me? And I think it's a super important piece for your own story, because I know for me, that was where I was living. I had a lot of trauma growing up, and I would have said like, oh, I didn't have trauma. And I just thought that I was easily angered as the pressures of life mounted. Mm-hmm. But what I started to realize is like, no, my central nervous system, I had to have other professionals help me go, your central nervous system's operating really high. Mm-hmm. And you're going from like 8 to 10 really quick with very minor, you know, infractions or things that are bothering you. And but why that was so freeing to me is because I thought I was so messed up for so long. I was like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just be like chill around this certain stuff? Yeah. And so I know that's not everyone's story, and that's not an excuse. I think don't use that as an excuse if you're just an angry person. Like, people that have really experienced trauma know what I'm talking about. If you're just angry because you would prefer things a certain way, that's one type. But I think it's important to understand that. And because one of the things that you mentioned even here, or we talked about a little bit, was the idea of triggers. Things can trigger us. Mm-hmm. And triggers are not actually irritations, although I thought they were for a long time. Yeah. I thought like when I would say, Elizabeth's triggering me, it's like, well, she's irritating me. And you know, I think everyone maybe understands that word different, but even just recently I was talking to my therapist and he helped me see something really clearly. He said, triggers are like more like time travel. When you are triggered by something, what that essentially means is you, something happens within your world right now that triggers a trauma response that you experienced. It could be a week ago, a day ago, years ago. And what ends up happening to your body, to your central nervous system, is that it goes back and it picks up those feelings. It's triggered to feel that way. And your body doesn't have a sense of time. It doesn't know that you're not 4 or 5 or 6 years old anymore. It just knows that the feeling that you have now is the feeling that you had then. And you go into this almost like overt response. And that was incredibly helpful for me as well, because I realized, like, no, when I'm feeling something in this moment, when I'm actually triggered, I'm actually mad and or overwhelmed by a situation that is not right in this moment. Like, it maybe has similarities, maybe some of the words are similar, or maybe
superimposed the current irritation that we should be maybe met at a level 4 over something that was traumatizing to you.
Exactly.
Really what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. And so triggers can be time traveling.
Okay, so let me ask you then. So husbands and wives, you know, helping each other in this case. What can someone else do for you, having been through some pretty significant trauma? What can, say, Elizabeth do to help you in that moment? And what is not helpful in that moment?
I can give you the long list of what's not helpful. You haven't said much. I think you're being quiet on purpose over here. Well, what doesn't help me? Well, it all depends. I think, well, the first thing I could say is, each personality is different. Some people, when it comes to fight, flight, fawn, some people, when they are overwhelmed, they step away. Mm-hmm. They just become really passive and they just have to eject. Mm-hmm. I am not that type of person. I move towards the problem or the pain. So I would be more defined as a fighter, in the sense of, like, if there's a problem, I'm going to address it. I'm going to move towards it. Now, that's problematic when I'm triggered and she's trying to help calm me down, and she wants to calm me down, but I'm like in this space where I'm literally like in fight or flight. So, like, basically the words that are used in that space are like, my biology has taken over, and my biology at that point is hijacking me. So I don't have, like, I can think all the logical thoughts, but my biology has then like taken over, and I have to have enough awareness in that moment that, okay, my biology's taken over. It's hijacking me right now. I actually have a few things that I can do, and they're the only things I can do to reset. It's usually going on a walk. It's stepping out of the situation. It's not talking for 30, 45 to an hour. Like, those are the only things I can do to reset my biology. But in the moment when we're frustrated, if she's trying to help and say, you should go on a walk, I'm like, it doesn't, I don't receive it. I do not, I mean, ask her, I do not respond well when I'm in that state of mind, because I'm like, no, I have to address the issue. Walking away feels like failure. I feel like I can't just like let this thing go, because I did it. I was the one that was angry, and now I need to be the one to fix it. And it's almost like this, you know, I'm a verbal processor, so maybe I'm just learning about all these things right now. But, you know, you're essentially like, she's trying to help me, but in turn, because of my personality, my disposition, and that's just how I'm wired, I don't respond well to it. I often have to just ignore and walk away and just be like, I gotta go on a walk or whatever. They're not pleasant moments, if you can pick up on that.
No. I think the most helpful thing has been the conversations that we have when he's not triggered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
And I think because you had a long time of not understanding what was happening.
Yes, and that was the worst. That was the worst.
That you, for a long time, carried a lot of shame of, you knew you were over-responding.
But I didn't know why, and I didn't know how to like, come
you
back
said,
from it.
To you, stepping away seemed like failure, and like you weren't going to come back and resolve it.
Yeah, like I was ejecting from the problem.
Yeah, so I think I had to, one, recognize that I married a man with trauma, which means I married his trauma, which means I have a level of responsibility of understanding what's happening, to be able to help him through it, to be able to love him through it. And so I've had to understand what's happening to him in those moments. And I've had to have conversations when he's not triggered of reassuring him, it is not failure if you walk away. It is actually the most respectful, loving, valiant thing you could do mm-hmm. is to remove yourself, is to say, I don't want to damage anybody. Mm-hmm. And yeah. so I am going to go on a walk. Mm-hmm. And I've had to reassure him, when you do that, I feel loved. I can handle what's happening. I mm-hmm. know you're going to come back calm yeah. and you're going to apologize yeah. and we're going to make this right.
Yeah.
But you're actually minimizing damage when you go on a walk. And even yeah. a while back, we interviewed Andy Kolber, who's a therapist, mm-hmm. and she was talking about this very thing of basically being mm-hmm. triggered outside your window of tolerance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she said, and this kind of surprised me, but she was very like firm about it. She said, the absolute best thing you can do when you feel yourself going outside of your window of tolerance or being triggered mm-hmm. is to get one foot out of it as fast as you can. Basically, she yeah. said, go outside, get away from your kids.
Yeah.
To minimize damage is what she sure. was saying. Yeah. Is like, you need to figure out whatever you need to do to get one foot back in that window of tolerance. We can link the episode. But to minimize the damage, because we unintentionally, that's when we do mm-hmm. the damage.
Right. I love this, because I think what you're showing in that moment is, I'm taking responsibility for my now sinful anger.
Yes.
And I'm mm-hmm. the only one who can honestly take responsibility. And if walking away is what's doing it, then mm-hmm. that is the most loving mm-hmm. thing that you can do.
And it's different than, I'm so mad, I'm just going to walk away and call you out. Different. That's not what we're talking about.
Especially if there's kind of, the family knows in advance that this yeah. is... this is what you do, because it's yeah. the righteous things
we,
to do.
We have an agreed upon understanding.
Yeah.
When I say go on a walk, that means usually 15 to 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm actually walking. I'm not getting in my car, driving off somewhere. No. I'm walking. I'm physically moving my body, right leg,
getting
left
outside,
leg. Getting
creation.
That. Yeah. There's yeah. a lot of, and there's a lot of biological things yeah. that even so much of science and our biology connects with. Just even physically being outdoors, how calming and yes. resetting. I remember when Birdie was having all of these crazy seizures and she was not able to make sense of reality, and she would get so overwhelmed and she had no words yet to communicate. They would say, just walk outside,
yeah.
just literally hold her. Yeah. Doesn't matter what the temperature is, cold, yeah. rainy, whatever, walk outside. Mm-hmm. And basically they were kind of saying like, just her body will naturally reset. And we're like, what are you talking about?
Remarkable.
But every time she would become overwhelmed and have no words yet to be able to communicate her overwhelmedness or what's going on or her anger or frustration, we'd walk outside and it was about, you know, 10, 20, 30 seconds. And she would just begin to become calm mm-hmm. and then calmer and mm-hmm. calmer. Mm-hmm. And so I think even for anybody that's struggling, this is at least something to try, like try. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I think the other point is, when I do those prayer, when I do those walks, they're not just walks. They are deep talks with God about, I don't want to be this way, but I am mm-hmm. being this way. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's prayer of, help re-regulate me. It's the prayers of just like, God, I really need you in this moment. I think it's just the desperate prayers of David that yeah. as you read through the yeah. Psalms of like, just meet mm-hmm. me here. This like is so messy. It's not pretty. I don't like any of this going on. I'm not okay with how I responded to this. I'm not okay with what I said here. So it's both end repentance. And I think the reason I'm saying that is because it's one thing to just go on a walk and think your thoughts. It's a whole other thing to bring the Spirit into it and allow him to shape your thoughts and to help him confirm in you who he sees you to be, mm-hmm. what he thinks about you, how this isn't the end of your life or you haven't ruined anything. He keeps at bay the shame and the evil that can come in those spaces, I think, mm-hmm. and helps reassure. So I think that's an important thing. And I know that's what I do, and I still have to do it. And it's such a bummer. Like sometimes I do hope that soon, eventually I'll get to a spot where I'm like, I'm not having to like go on these walks because I'm able to regulate enough and know mm-hmm. enough preemptively, but I'm not there yet. I'm still totally yeah. in process, but yeah. that's,
but the reality is, I mean, you're explaining it from a context of having like a trauma response and a triggered response.
Yeah. Yeah.
I oftentimes am angry, not because I have some deep trauma that goes way back. I just struggle with anger. And so
yeah.
you're not the only one that has to put a pause and yeah. go mm-hmm. deal with it. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I have to almost angrily say, I'm sorry, I can't deal with this with you right now. I'm too mad. I need
yeah.
a minute.
Yeah. And that's a mature, that's honestly a mature response.
Yeah.
That's a self-controlled response. Even though we feel shame because we're feeling this anger, this sinful anger, but to stop yourself is a matter of immense self-control.
And when you think about all of these moments we're talking about, whether you need to say directly to your kids, I'm too angry right now, I need a minute, or Brooke, you need to just pull away quickly, or whatever it may be. If you think about if we're coming back and doing the repairs, which is really, really important, and I know we're going to talk about that. Think about what you're teaching your kids. Mm-hmm. You're not just like telling them how to resolve something with their sibling. You're literally showing them what to do when they're so overwhelmed, lacking self-control. Yeah. I mean, it's not pretty. We're showing them our sin, but we're showing them that you can deal with it, that you can stop yourself, that you can go talk to God about it and calm down and come back and apologize for where you did blow it.
Exactly.
That you can stop yourself mid-blowing it and recognize, wait, this is not how I want to treat you, but I need to go calm down.
Right.
You know, I think that teaches our kids more than us explaining to them for the hundredth time, this is how you give a proper apology. You know,
but it's actually doing it within moments of your breath. And, you know, all that you're saying right now makes me think of, in the New Living, Jesus teaching the Beatitudes. The first one is in Matthew 5:3, and it's one that just catches me every time. We think God blesses those who are just amazing, right? Who just amazingly patient, never get mad, just kindness itself. But it's not what Jesus spoke and taught. God blesses those who realize their need for him, for the kingdom of heaven is given to them. And another version, it could be said that God blesses those who are desperate for him.
Yes.
And I think our anger reveals the truth is that we are people who are desperate for God.
Yeah.
And living apart from him, we can't deal with that kind of anger. And so, but when we bring our anger to him and we say, okay, so this is a real thing. I don't want this in my life. And then we allow him to teach us and to speak into us, you know, to examine us and say, what is, you know, my favorite question, what is this really about?
Yeah.
Am I really mad that the kids made another mess for me to clean up? Or am I exhausted? I've tried to pack in too much into my day. So this interruption, there's no room for, because I've edged in one too many things for my actual capacity. Mm-hmm. Not the capacity maybe that other women have or other dads have, but my actual capacity. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, forces us to live authentic lives. Because the minute we're starting to get angry with our kids, we have to realize I am not in the will of God right now because I've pushed myself further than I can be kind.
Yeah.
And that's not the will of the Father for us. Mm. You know, we ask God to be in our decisions all the time, to lead us, to guide us. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many things he would actually have us delete from our lives while we're raising our children so that we have room and capacity and space to respond with habitual kindness to the reality is that they are also little sinners and they're doing wrong stuff. Suddenly, it's not like it creeps up slowly.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here, there's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values, what is discipline versus punishment, How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Well, and here's the deal, because I think we're all talking about this. We want to give you five different things that you can do to process this and to transition into that. I just want to say, James chapter 1, verse 19
yes.
says this, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry." Mm-hmm. That's a, if you want to get a verse tattooed somewhere, that's great it. One.
That's Could a you good imagine? One.
That'd be great.
Yes.
And then verse 20, "Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Exactly. Therefore," verse 21, "get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent."
Yeah.
"And humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you."
Yeah.
And then verse 22, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says."
Wow.
And I think that's how do we actually do this? We don't want to deceive ourselves. We do what the word says. We live in honesty. We live in forgiveness. We do what it says, and we end up not deceiving ourselves. So I'd like to go through these five if you ladies are ready. Mm-hmm. And I know we'll have some thoughts along the way, but how do you essentially, as you have find yourself in anger, what do you do with all of that? How do you process this? If you find yourself in this, you know, a place that our sister who was so kind to share this question, what do you do with that? We want to give you five ways. Diane, did you want to say something before we go?
No, okay. I like these five ways.
You came up with most of them, or all of them. So
it does show that I have wrestled with anger. Yeah. And so real moment here. These are the five things that seem to have made a difference so that I have become slow to anger.
Yes.
It also helps that I no longer have a bunch of little kids in the house. I'm not sure I'd be slow to anger if I went back to that stage. But hopefully age brings some mellowing of some of those emotions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing you can do is to identify when and why you have outbursts of anger.
Yeah.
Identify when and why. I think this, what I like about this one is how practical it is, right? Like identify how and why, or when and why. I think if you have a problem, particularly with bed, I know for us, I'll just say for us, bedtime, for whatever reason, produces a lot of anger in our house. Mm-hmm. And it primarily does because it seems to be this weird time in which everyone decides to forget everything that we've ever taught them. Mm-hmm. And decides, if I'm going to test something or a boundary, this will be the time that I do it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem to just be one. It'd be so nice if it was just one. It seems to be, the older two are different now because they're in different stages. We had the situation, Duke just got home from camp last night and he fell asleep at 5:30 p.m. and for a nap, and I went to go wake him up and I was like, I don't think he's going to wake up. I was like, okay, bud, I guess you're going to go to sleep for tonight. If you need something in the middle of the night, because I'm sure you'll be up, just let me know. And then I didn't hear from him until 9:30 this morning. He slept from 5:30 at night to 9:30 in the morning.
And woke up so happy and talkative.
So we don't have that situation with him, but you know, even the little ones, it's like they talk and they're like, "Do you guys want to drive mom and dad crazy? You want to do it? Yeah,
let's do it.
Let's do it."
Here's the thing with kids at night and kids at bedtime. This is a little off the anger thing. So I wish I had understood this when I was a parent. All of a sudden, nighttime is coming and all their fears rise to the surface and all their anxieties the fact that they have to let go of control. It is a big trust thing for a child to fall asleep. So I think just going in knowing there's anxiety here and it is triggering some of their misbehavior is they're going to do everything they can do to avoid going to bed, because going to bed and going to sleep is scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just scary for children.
Yeah. Not for me. I love it.
I do too.
When bedtime comes, I'm like, I'm not scared at all.
So you've identified that nighttime, bedtime is often when you have outbursts of anger. Yeah. Then you're going to be preparing for that. And what is it about it? Is it because you're so tired? You've worked all day long.
Absolutely.
You just tried to get them to eat a healthy meal.
And they rejected it.
but just identifying it's because you feel, now for me as a parent, it was often at night that I felt like I had a right to begin to wind down my day, that I was tired and overstressed, and they're impinging on my right right now. They're inconveniencing me. They're making me more tired. So I think that's a typical time to get. I mean, I don't think I ever got up first thing in the morning and felt angry at my kids. I mean, first thing in the morning, they're adorable. Usually, they go to bed at night.
That's actually a very good point.
Not so
very
much,
good point.
You know, but even if there are just certain things that you know you are reactive towards, just knowing that being is aware, like a little bit of a, it's like putting one of those, I grew up for many years living in Germany, and there were these signs that we as kids used to love to see. They were a yellow triangle, and it would say in the middle, Achtung. And so, you know, of course, we used all this harsh kind of language towards each other. Achtung. You know, but it is kind of an Achtung kind of a sign of it's evening. I need to be careful that I'm walking in the spirit.
Yeah.
That I'm cleaving close to God. And so I'm representing the Father as I help my child let go of control and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. I mean, just even that kind of self-talk, I think will help us not be so quick to get into the habit of.
I think that sounds beautiful, and I think that's very hard to do. I think it's a good picture.
There's
it's a very
also
helpful
beauty
picture.
In communicating with your spouse about this, because chances are you're not triggered to the same degree about the same things.
Right.
The things that stress me out and make me angry are different oftentimes. Not always. Bedtime's hard.
Yeah.
But I think even identifying, okay, these are the places I struggle. So being able to say to your spouse, hey, this is extra hard for me. Can you really partner with me when we have to do bedtime?
Right.
Okay. Because sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't. Or we'll say to each other sometimes I'll say to him, I've got capacity for it right now. I don't know why, but I just do. So let me take the lead on this.
Yeah.
And then other times I don't. But I think that's where we can really parent in partnership and team and really rely on each other. And we have to be able to be humble and say, this is this for whatever reason brings out the worst in me every time. So can you help me? Can I lean
on
you?
Or one particular child can just push your buttons in a particular way. Yep. So maybe having a more understanding, compassionate parent at that moment take care of that certain child. Even just doing that, identifying when and why that you have outbursts of anger, even that is just taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm. It's super helpful. Mm-hmm. What you're both saying is so helpful is identify it so then you could even communicate like, this particular moment is really hard for me. Can we work a way to just like help this not be such a heavy deal? Yeah. Because suffering through and just trying to be better is not the answer for you to become less angry. So,
and even simplifying things like a bedtime routine, you know, if we save too many of the unpleasant chores for evening, that's probably not a good time.
Yeah.
To do
willpower
those.
Is the we have the least amount at night. So, the second one, which connects to that, and I think it is, an also very helpful one. I know is very helpful to me is make any necessary changes to de-escalate your reactivity. Mm-hmm. I know some of the examples, and I think there's probably more, but sleep. Do you need to adjust your sleep, your exercise, drinking, your margin? Do you need breaks away from the kids? Dealing with your hurts, dealing with your expectations or hurt expectations. Mm-hmm. This week, Elizabeth's about to go to LA for 3 days or 4 days. How long are you going to be gone? I should know this. How long
are you 3 days.
She's going to be gone visiting her sister, and I have all four kids. And I'm like so happy that she's leaving. And I'm also so scared. Yeah. I'm both like, and I always feel this way when she leaves. I'm like, oh, I've got this. And then there's a part of my mind. I'm like, I never cook. What am I going to make for food?
Yeah, don't worry. I'm cooking for you before I go.
Are you? You don't have to do that. Are you serious?
That's amazing.
Well, the kids have to eat.
I know how to feed children. I just don't know how to feed children your exact diet that you would prefer for them made in an excellent way where our kids don't complain about it. That's the difference. Everyone is alive and happy and healthy when you get back. It's just, is it as good of quality? Probably not. No, not at all.
I want to highlight one of these. Not in the legalistic way, but the drinking. I think there are some people who, when they have a glass of wine, just mellow and they're lovely conversationalists. And then yes, there are others who have a glass of wine and they are reactive. Yeah, and they lose some of their filters and don't realize the damage they're doing. So I feel like that's just sometimes in Christian circles, we're so afraid to be judgmental or legalistic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love a glass of wine from time to time. But just being careful to make sure that we're asking our spouse if we're becoming unkind, if we're losing our filters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that our spouse to speak into that. Just in case, because I've heard just too many stories of people growing up in homes where their parent hurt them.
Yeah.
Because they just lost some of the discernment that comes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think the other part that I totally agree with you on that, because I think there's a massive acceptance in our culture and time of basically, you know, how like, hey, just drink. Oh, we currently have a printer going off in the background. So if you hear stuff, that's what's going on. This is real life. This is what we do. Yeah. So anyway, though, you know, the sleep and the exercise piece.
Yeah.
I think often we neglect these specific things and we kind of go, oh, it's just not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I get like 4 or 5 hours. It's fine. Or, you know, oh, it's not a big deal. I'll exercise later. But exercise and sleep affect your mood and your edginess almost more than, I mean, similar to diet. So I know for myself, and I think Elizabeth's already in tune with this. I think this is most people, but I think for me, I lived in a season, a time where I wasn't as connected to this. But what I eat, how much sleep I get, and how much I move or don't move my body affect my mood greatly.
Yeah.
Like, just greatly. I think more people actually have that experience than they're attuned to.
I think we should just expect that this is true of every human body.
Yes.
Yeah.
Human body.
And obviously most doctors would be like, yes, of course, I get it.
Yes.
But I just think there's this world that we live in a lot of the times, even just in our social circles, where we don't actually, we'll hear that somebody sleeps 5 hours a night, has a terrible diet, never exercises, and they're having all these problems. And we're just trying to address them all with these verses.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, these verses are awesome. But have you had a good night's sleep?
Yeah.
Have you actually had food that's real? Have you moved your body? Because God actually designed all of that within you to biologically help reset even some of the temperament of your soul.
Yes.
And so I just know that there's things that I have to do that I don't like doing all the time. And I go in and out of it. Like I go in and out of these moments and but I would just say for myself, that is a big one with making me way less responsive. Sure. I'm not as quick and edgy. If I'm exerting myself physically, I tend to not have so much. I can run at a higher pace in my head or just run higher. And so I tend to like, it de-escalates my intensity when I actually exercise and move regularly. So anyway, I think that's just, that is something that you should, I have found so helpful.
And then also getting breaks away from your kids.
Yes.
Together and separately, together to realize that you are still lovers and friends, not just mom and dad, who, you know, are trying to partner together. And individually, I think moms who stay home all the time with their kids need to get away from their kids.
Oh,
They need, like you're having this weekend, you'll go down and you'll visit Rebecca and she'll treat you just because she's amazing this way. She knows exactly how to treat you to special things. And I'll bet by the last night, you will be like ready. You know, you're filled up again and you're ready to pour out to your kids. And I think those are really important. And then the parents who say, well, I've never left my kids. That should not be a badge of honor. That should be more I have to really rethink this is not a good thing.
Well, and there's probably, and maybe to that, because everyone's different, right? Like Elizabeth's more of an introvert. So she needs time away from everybody, including me and the kids, to really feel recharged. Mm-hmm. And that's not a shame on her or whatever at all. It's just, that's how she's wired. So we honor her by setting up our life for that. But there's some people that just don't feel the need to be away from their kids. But even so, and I agree with you, even if you don't have the felt need, the appreciation, the care for self is, it's amazing how much like perspective we have when we step away. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel the need as much as Elizabeth does, but I still feel it even as an extrovert. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm on a trip or I'm away for a couple nights or I have things going on, I always like, it's about day one or two. I just appreciate everyone so much more, so much more. Yeah. And it's a really healthy process. So I know we have three more and I want to hit those really quick. This is just the most important one. I'm just gonna say it after all of them. They're all really important, but this one is gonna be the one that this just helps so immensely. When you fail with your outbursts of anger, confess, repent, and apologize. That is, I mean, huge. I know that that has been the biggest thing for our family. We talk about it a lot here because it's so important that apologizing, giving, asking, and giving forgiveness. Excuse me, is so monumental. It's the ointment that starts the healing process of the relationship.
Yeah. And it's actually how you build a strong family. It's not by doing it all perfectly.
Yeah.
It's by that idea of rupture, because there will be rupture, but rupture and then repair. The apology is the repair that builds resilience, which is what we all want. We all want these strong, resilient families who love each other through every season, who can argue and resolve it and then go have fun together. Yes. But that's what the apology does. Yes. Because like I said, we can't live with this false idea that we're never going to get mad at our kids. We are human living in a fallen world. That's just not possible. Mm-hmm. But even I was just reminded, have just been fascinated by the whole idea of attachment theory and creating secure attachment and all of those things. And the idea that if you don't have a secure attachment, you can actually build one later in life and kind of reattach, whether it's through the relationship with your spouse or other people, that you can eventually come out with a secure attachment. But they use that picture. I don't even know what they're called. I need to look it up. I think there's some type of like Chinese art or something these, when a pot or bowl cracks.
Yeah, you told me about this.
They don't just throw it out.
You were giving me what was this for? Was it that you said this? I felt like this was something you gave me that you felt like the spirit gave you for me. Am I right about that, or am I just being narcissistic?
No, it was like it came up in therapy. I like remembered this, and then my therapist said, that's actually how they define when you like reattach securely. So it's I need to look up what they're called, but like it's a pot that's cracked, and instead of throwing it out, they refire it with little pieces of gold and they melt that into the cracks and then put it in the kiln again and refire it.
Okay.
And to them, it's like this really valuable piece of art and it's worth a lot of money. And it comes out this beautiful, like what once was broken now has just these gold lines going through it.
Yeah.
And that's the imagery they give for when you haven't had a secure attachment, but then you can heal and create one later.
Yeah.
Is that it's this beautiful and stronger, like the vessel is actually stronger after it's been broken and repaired and put through the fire again.
Such a good
visual. It's stronger.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is what the apology does. Yes, and I know so many who grew up in homes where their parents would have these outbursts of anger, but they've never heard their parents apologize.
Or they would, like in my case, sometimes my mom would do something really nice.
Yes.
And that, you know, years later, I came to recognize as an apology for the things she had said. But what I needed was for her to say, and she eventually did. Mm-hmm. Die, I should not have said that. I didn't actually mean that. It's not your fault. Mm-hmm. This is on me. Mm-hmm. An apology does that. An apology sets the person you've damaged with your tongue, with your angry countenance, free of, it absolves them of feeling like I made you mad. Mm-hmm. Because we know that that is not true. Mm-hmm. We own our own anger. Yeah. Nobody can make me mad. No. I choose to respond in an outburst is my choice. And that's an apology teaches that to your kids in real time. Mm-hmm. And, and you know, we remember that part of the apology, and we've talked about this enough on here, is the restoration of the relationship. Mm-hmm. So it isn't just, I'm sorry. Yeah. It is then pursuing relationship and doing the work to put things back together again. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it's so, amazing mm-hmm. how you can heal so many outbursts yeah. of anger or yeah. broken moments. So
yeah.
Fourthly, be compassionate to yourself and others. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing just to mention on this, and we'll move to the last one, but being compassionate to yourself and others, it's hard to be kind to other people if you're not kind to yourself.
Yeah.
It's just so hard. Exactly. If you have such a negative self-critic mm-hmm. constantly speaking, this will be something that is really, really hard to do for other people. So just to be kind, like life yeah. is hard. Look at your whole situation. Look at the past. Where have you come from? Be kind with the fact mm-hmm. that there's been a lot that you've gone through. And that doesn't mm-hmm. mean using it as an excuse. It means mm-hmm. be honest about where you've been. Maybe it's hard because it's actually been that hard. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's that devastating and it's going to take yeah. a while until you get back to health. So, mm-hmm.
And watch that self-talk, you know, the cruel,
yes,
I'm an idiot or I'm a failure or I did it again. I yeah. mean, the things that we say to ourselves that don't help that actually then just build up more pressure inside. Yeah. And make us more reactive.
Yes. You know? And last, use consistent biblical discipline, which is training, to lower your emotional intensity in your family interactions. And yeah. that idea of biblical discipline training, meaning like you're actually taking time to spend time reading. Mm-hmm. You're taking time to pray to God about the things that you're actually processing mm-hmm. through. You're actually taking the time to build into your life a way that is not always like I think point number two, that you're actually making necessary changes within your life through mm-hmm. spiritual disciplines mm-hmm. of like, how do I de-escalate my reactivity, mm-hmm. prayer walks, giving things mm-hmm. away, living simply, you know, there's so mm-hmm. many different disciplines to walk in that yeah. will help honestly de-escalate the anger that you're feeling and experiencing on a day-to-day yeah. basis.
And on top of that, when I wrote that, what I was really actually meaning was also, are you disciplining your children in a godly way and training them so that they are not being obnoxious, honestly, you know? I mean, I know I'm hearing a lot about something that people are calling gentle discipline, and it's such a beautiful concept. I mean, I think gentle discipline is a beautiful concept, but there are an awful lot of kids who are just going to spit in the face of somebody who only just makes this suggestion that, honey, you really don't want to do that. And there are yes, times in with those. Certain people,
yes.
With certain children, where you need to have firm, you're still being gentle, but you're absolute. You cross this line and here are the very clear consequences of what will happen every time. So that children are de-escalating yeah. as well. Mm. So if you're allowing your kids to scream in your face and expecting yourself to be just super kind and respectful back to them, that's probably unrealistic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad you made this clarification because I took it one direction, but you're right.
It was a good direction.
Well, I think it's both in, right? I think it's both. Like, I think you need both of those mm-hmm. things. But just yesterday, parenting kids with special needs is obviously some of these tools that we even talk about here in this space work, and some of them don't. And so we're often in a space with Birdie where we're trying mm-hmm. to figure out new things, mm-hmm. and she was really upset. And so I said, "Hey, why don't you go up into your room? You're not in trouble, but like, let's get you into a quieter space. Let's talk." Mm-hmm. And so I said, "Why don't you get up on your bed?" She has the top bunk bed right now, and so we're having a conversation. And I'm like, "What's going on? You just seem really mad about something." And she's like, it was so funny because listening to her spout back what was so frustrating, it wasn't even about the thing that was downstairs. She's like in her bed and she's like, "I just remember when I had a kid bed and I need my own bed. I can't believe I'm up here. I'm up here and our dog can't get up on my bed. And it's just not fair that he can't get up on the bed." And so I'm trying to use all the tools that we've heard from therapy, like just reflect back. So I hear you saying that your bunk bed's too high.
You don't like your bunk bed.
I hear you saying that Django can't get up here and that really bothers you. I hear you saying, I'm just literally trying to use all of these tools. Mm-hmm. And then she stops me and she said, and you're being mean to me. And you're being mean to me. I said, sweetie, I said, that's not being mean. I'm being firm. I told you downstairs that if you don't stop having this reaction to when I say no, that there's consequences. I'm not being mean. I'm being direct. I'm being firm. I'm not mad at you right now. I mm-hmm. love you. I care for you, but you can't keep doing that and not get in trouble. Mm-hmm. So that just came to my mind when you said that, because I had this exact, like this little girl saying, you're being mean. Like this was ringing through my head and having to clarify that for them, that it's not mean to be direct. It's not mean to say, hey, if that continues, there's absolutely going to be consequences. You don't have to be angry. You don't have to. And oftentimes, but it was also funny by the end of it, you know, then she went into the whole bed spiel again. She's like, and I just need to sleep on the floor with Django tonight. Is it fine if I can sleep on the floor? I was like, I hear you saying that you want to sleep on the floor with Django. And then by the end of it, I was like, yeah, you can sleep on the floor with Django tonight. That's fine.
Yeah.
And she just like, it like whatever reason, like something triggered and just everything turned off. And she's like,
Okay.
All right. Fine. Well, let's go have dinner, you know?
Yeah.
It was funny that you
mentioned her, because I was thinking of her at this, when you were just talking, Mom, about this last one. And, you know, outbursts of anger are a very frequent occurrence for her. And it's different than our other kids. It's not like we can just discipline it and parent it and they'll stop. Her emotional regulation and impulsivity is just really hard. And so there's lots and lots and lots of outbursts of anger. But I was thinking Birdie.
You're talking about a form of discipline, though.
Yeah. Well, because I was just going to say. Because discipline
is training. You're training Birdie to deal with her overwrought sensitivities.
But I was thinking of Birdie, even in all the complicated things and just that the outbursts come often. And yet here she is. She's 6 years old and she is learning how to apologize. So she will now come on her own after a huge outburst. After just appalling things will come out of her mouth and we're still trying to figure out how do we figure this out in real time? How do we make it stop? You know, knowing it's going to stop eventually, but who knows how long it will be. But eventually she's always coming back to, Mommy, I'm sorry that I yelled at you. Will you please forgive me?
It's beautiful.
Even if for her it's different, she has less control in the moment. But she's still learning, I need to go make it right after it's all over, after I've calmed down, you know, and the hope being as she gets older that she will gain more and more control and more tools, more understanding of what's happening.
Yeah.
But I think, if Birdie can learn it, we can all learn it.
And I want to make sure, I want to be really clear, we all struggle with anger. And I think the reason we're sharing that story is simply because we're so shocked by the fact that that's what she would pick up, is to actually apologize. We're like, oh my gosh, this is a miracle. So if it can happen for us, it can happen for you, in the sense that, you know, we know how hard it can be.
Think what you're teaching her in some of those disciplinary conversations, not punishment, disciplinary training conversations.
Yeah.
You are still bringing it back to her that it's her responsibility, but that you're coming alongside her to help her figure out how to calm herself down and to get herself back in a good place. We had the girls the other night, and Sloan was 4-year-old Sloan.
Her name means warrior. That's all we need to say.
That's all you got to say.
Her name means warrior. You know
what? Let this be a lesson. Do not name your little girl or little boy Sloan, because
active labor with her, like full on in labor in the hospital. And I remember looking at Brooke and saying, are you sure we should name her that? Sloan. What if it's prophetic?
So it's very prophetic. She's a little warrior.
She's a warrior.
But she was being
a warrior.
A warrior.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, we're grandparents. Yeah. So we have learned over, you know, through experience that the most that we can do is do a gentle correction with these kids. If we even rebuke them in any way with intensity, it's like their world falls apart. That's just grandma and grandpa, mama and pops, just don't. That's not their place. So they are the ones who taught us. I wouldn't have known that otherwise. They're the ones who taught us that a gentle correction is the most we can do. So here she needed a lot more than a gentle correction, but we're trying to figure out what to do so she didn't hurt anybody. And so I remember, Elizabeth, you have studied your kids and then you've told me what you've learned. That she is sensory seeking. So a sensory seeking child is when they're overwhelmed, they actually will look for touch.
They're needing, they're not getting enough sensory input on a normal life.
She was going to demand it at the top of her lungs if need be. And so I just did the simplest thing, and watching her just made me feel like almost this is what it must look like when the Heavenly Father soothes us. Mm. So I picked her up and I said, I want to give you something special. I'm going to do something special. And I mean, it was, I mean, I made it sound like it was like amazing. A big, big deal. And I just put some really good smelling bubble bath into a warm a sink full of warm water. And she sat there. She was already in her jammies and put her feet into it. And I said, we're going to take care of your feet. They've worked really hard today. You jumped and you ran into things.
I didn't know
things.
You did this.
And,
this is great. Yeah,
and they were filthy dirty because we had decided we weren't going to give her a bath before bed. We were going to give her back to you dirty the next day.
So we're good.
So I rubbed her feet and I'm talking to her the whole time and she, you could just see her shoulders relax and I rubbed the bottom of her legs and then we dried them by patting. I said, no, you got to be pat. Just be careful. And then we put on sparkly lotion.
This is where it's coming from.
And then I gave her kind of a face massage with some special face lotion. And then she wanted more sparkles on that. And then she wanted lipstick. And then I brushed her hair really carefully. And she was just like melted in my arms. I put her down on the mat where she was going to be sleeping. And she was asleep in like 5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And
gosh.
I thought, isn't that the way of the Heavenly Father with us?
Yes.
You know, it'd been so easy to just get mad and
I do sometimes.
You know, yeah, in the moment. But what she really needed was somebody just to pamper her.
It's so beautiful. Well, this is all making so much sense. So I didn't know this story, but the other day they kept asking if they could like give me a foot bath. And I was like, girls, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, and I was telling you how Jesus gave his best friends a foot bath and their feet were really gross.
It's all making sense because they kept on asking. And I was like, girls, I think you mean wash my feet and that's sweet, but like, I'm okay.
No, thank you.
I'm already dressed. I'm getting ready to walk out the door. Like, okay. I have shoes on. I'm like, kind of like not the good time. Just laced up the Converse. I can't really, it's going to take too much time, girls. I got to go. And so.
But they just wanted to love you in a way that had meant love to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that's what I'm learning.
I do think that, you know, for all of our talk of order and structure and, you know, all our Bible verses and all of that, sometimes I just want to picture my Heavenly Father in those moments
just
when I'm like Sloane and that he just wants to wash my feet and put on some sparkly lotion and just make me remember who I really am.
Yeah.
The real Sloane was asleep in just moments because she'd been nurtured.
Yep.
And I think that's what God does with us.
He does. And so if you are a person that is struggling with anger, pray these verses in. Maybe you need a foot bath. maybe you need to give someone a foot bath. Maybe that. I hope that's not the most you take away from this episode, but I think it's actually a very practical way. So take notes on these five things. If that's helpful, pray these verses into your life. And we hope you enjoy today. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.